So how do you know if a house is abandoned? Busted windows, obviously, overgrown lawns, slabs of wood used to barricade entrances. Sometimes the junk mail is stacked up in the mailbox. Some signs are not as easy to see, though, like just how much vacated homes cost a city. A recent study by Georgia Tech professor Dan Immergluck reveals that upkeep of blighted properties run up a tab in the millions of dollars for Atlanta. And then there are the bodies. Corpses have been discovered in vacant properties across the city, and that includes two women who were strangled to death and dumped in an empty home. Today we'll talk about blight with a panel of people who study this problem. Dan Immergluck of Georgia Tech joins us once again. He's a professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Willoughby Mariano, investigative reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Good to see you again, Willoughby.
It's great to see you.
And Tina Arnold is the executive director of the group Sustainable Lakewood. Hi, Tina.
Good morning.
Dan, how many abandoned homes do we have in the metro Atlanta area?
Oh, I don't know about the metro, but we certainly have tens of thousands. In the city of Atlanta, the city did a study a couple of years ago and identified 8,000 or so residential vacant properties. About 2,400 of those were in really distressed, dilapidated condition.
What does distressed condition mean? Is that a technical term?
Well, they basically classified in the survey properties that were in good condition, fair condition, and then poor or dilapidated condition. And they had a kind of visual inspection device where they looked at the condition of the house. And if it was boarded up, if it was seriously dilapidated physically, if it was really unlivable, it fell into the poorer, dilapidated categories.
So, Willoughby, since the study that Dan is talking about, the city has taken some action. There's been some attention to abandoned properties. What's happened?
Well, so far, there's been a sort of a study committee on the issue. There's been more money devoted to code enforcement and a great deal of revitalization efforts in some of the most troubled areas, for instance, the English Avenue neighborhood near the stadium.
Since you mentioned that, let's hear from DeMarcus Peters. He's with the English Avenue Neighbors Association, and he's talking about a common example from his community.
It could be a property that was intended as an investment for someone who didn't necessarily live within the community but thought it was a good idea to make an investment, but then realized that that investment was way over their heads. Meanwhile, whole blocks or parts of blocks become abandoned and it was serve as safe harbor for people who would do criminal activity.
Willoughby, do we have any idea how many of these homes are owned simply by absent investors, people who just bought up houses?
Well, Dan actually did a little bit of, a lot of work on that, but it's hard to tell because the names on these, on the companies that own these properties are sort of vague, and it's hard to figure
track
out
down.
Who owns what. Individuals might own properties, and it's not clear if they are investors or, you know, from if you just look at the records, whether or not they plan to live there.
So, Tina, this brings us to you, because not knowing who owns a home is part of the reason that it's very difficult to address blighted houses, right?
Correct.
What have you been doing about some of the abandoned homes in the areas?
Well, we've been working for years now to help our own situation. If that means going in, cutting the grass, throwing mulch, we'll take truckloads of mulch and pour it on top of the grass so that we don't have to cut that grass again that year. We'll board the houses, and then we'll paint murals on the board. So it becomes a gem versus yet another problem for us to look at all day, every day.
Well, then, what is the describe to me the problem of an abandoned home? How, when, and how does it become a problem?
It becomes a problem the day the owner doesn't come and take care of it. You know, you have investors that, as he said, they want to do the right thing. They want to buy a house. They want to restore. They want to get into the real estate market. So they come in and they start working on the house, and then it's not properly boarded, or they have some guy from the street that says, hey, I can paint your whole house for $100. They go for it, and then when they come back, everything's gone. They had no insurance. They don't have more money to restore the house. So that's one of the examples of how the properties turn into empty shell messes for the rest of us. So without money, they just leave it. They just, you know, one day I'll come back, I'll do something, I'll save again. But in the meantime, the windows are being broken out. Homeless people are moving in them. People that are actually ripping off the other houses are using those to store, you know, some of that, those materials. And so...
So, that wait, people go and burgle homes that are occupied, and then they store the stolen goods in these abandoned homes.
They burgle occupied homes. They burgle unoccupied homes as well. So they need a place to put those cabinets and countertops that just stole from the house next door, you know, so they'll store it in there and then, you know, they'll come back and continually use it. And of course, both houses are now empty shelves. Both houses are sitting vacant, you know, with the windows knocked out, but nobody's going in them, not the normal working class citizen. We're not going in those homes because they look scary to us. They look like those haunted houses that, you know, we saw as kids that scared us to death. So we're not going in those houses. You know, I have not been in any of those houses personally, except for unless an owner says, Tina, you can go in. And then, of course, we've got to make a lot of noise before we go in because you will find people running out the back door.
And here's what that brings us to the bodies that have been found in some of the homes, Willoughby. The two women that were found recently had both been killed? Has those been ruled homicides?
Yes, definitely homicides. And some of their bodies have been in there for a while. And the funny thing is that, and the sad thing is that these homes become places for mischief, like these neighborhoods do. People do things in these neighborhoods. They come from the outside and do things in these houses, in these neighborhoods that they wouldn't do near their own homes. And so you find people dumping bodies there. You find people who died there because they entered the abandoned house to shoot up heroin. You find people who were squatting who had health problems that were never addressed, and they die. That's the sad thing about these homes. They're sort of a consequence of neglect and people's perception that no one really cares about what happens in the community.
Which, of course, then becomes a public health issue and also in the end is going to make it much more difficult to sell and rehabilitate that house. And then let's then bring in the cost to the city, which what kind of things did you include when you were estimating cost, Dan?
Well, we looked at two kinds of costs. First, we looked at what I call service costs, which are code enforcement costs, chasing down owners, going out to the building week after week. We also included police costs, 911 call costs to these vacant properties, fire costs. Some of these properties are involved in fires, and often vacant property fires are the most expensive fires because they're major fires. And we also looked, the other kind of costs we looked at are what I call spillover costs, basically the cost to the neighborhood that we can put a dollar figure on, which most directly is the decline in property values near those vacant homes. And when we added all these up, we basically got an annual figure, both including the service costs and the decline in property tax revenues of between $5 and $6 million a year.
Holy cow. Now, I looked on, this was from, I think, 2013, but I looked on a list of the cities with the most abandoned properties, and Atlanta is among the top 10. And I wonder, Tina, how much interaction have you had as you're going around with Sustainable Lakewood trying to board up homes and dump mulch on lawns? How much interaction do you have with the city?
We have some interaction with the city. The city has helped us with dumpsters when we're doing neighborhood cleanups. So we can actually take and clean off these homes and put the trash in the dumpster, and it's hauled away most times immediately so that you don't have a whole lot of extra spillover from everybody else coming and putting in. You know, we've encountered, you know, housing code enforcement and the police a few times, you know, where they're saying, who are you? Why are you on this property? And, you know, do you have permission? You know, things like that.
But I mean, I assume that you think more needs to be done, although we're hearing from Dan that's very expensive.
I do.
Who do you hold accountable?
I hold everybody accountable. I mean, I think that just everyone is responsible. The city is responsible through its legislation, and the state through its legislation or lack thereof of being able to instantly be able to call a property owner. I hold the state accountable for the fact that, you know, people can go and purchase a property without any form of identification. So therefore, if you ever go to the city's interim and listen in, you'll find that there's a lot of people that are called in to the interim to get a ticket, and they find that they own a property in Atlanta they never knew anything about because someone else, some crook, put their name on a property. And so now the city has to take responsibility for those properties that these people never knew anything about. I mean, the Sheila E. Foundation had two houses in our neighborhood that Sheila E. Foundation knew nothing about. They would just, they'll title them in other people's names, and so they sit.
So Willoughby, a few years back on this very issue, you interviewed a guy named Rick Warren, who's an investor from Buckhead, and he bought up a big chunk of property on English Avenue. Here's a little bit of that interview from 2014.
I am not a nonprofit. To look at any single street in the community and say that I own the majority of everything on XYZ Street, you're looking at one street in a community that this community across the board has issues and challenges that need a lot more than just owning 20 or 30% of one street. That's not going to resolve the issues and the challenges of what you deal with on a daily basis.
You had an update to the Rick Warren story. What's that?
Yeah, he's been convicted. He was convicted in September and sentenced in October to jail. He's appealing that.
On what were the charges?
On code enforcement violations. He won't be doing hard time, but he now has the opportunity to spend 30 days in jail for each count. But he is appealing, so he hasn't spent any time in jail.
So, Dan, where does this leave us? Who in the end is responsible? We only have about a minute left, but who do we see as the person who sort of has to get to the table to solve this issue?
Well, there's lots to do. The first thing I'd say is we still need to prosecute people like Rick Warren, but that's a very long and costly process.
Yeah.
And we have really hundreds of irresponsible, if not thousands of irresponsible investors out there. We need to start taking the property. We need to move more quickly through what's called judicial in rem foreclosure to basically put liens on properties, sometimes knock them down, sometimes fix them up. These liens become, through this judicial in rem process, a senior lien that can be foreclosed on. The city can take the property, put it in the Atlanta Fulton County Land Bank, and clean it up and remediate these properties. That's starting to happen. It's happening quite slowly,
yeah.
And it needs to happen much more. The city also needs some money to do this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And one issue is Macon has passed a $14 million bond last year, and they're starting to spend it. And it's used primarily for blight remediation. There's no reason the city of Atlanta couldn't do the same thing.
That is Dan Immergluck, professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. We also spoke with Willoughby Mariano, investigative reporter for the AJC. And Tina Arnold is executive director of Sustainable Lakewood. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.